from the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves. Get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This portion of the show is sponsored by Clemens Painting. If you're tired of living in space that's lost its luster, then there's no better time than the fall to spruce things up. If you can imagine, yep, the holidays are not far away, so let Clemens Painting make your house a home. They understand the importance of transforming your space. Scott Clemens prides himself on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. So let now be the only time to showcase your home. I did, and you know what? I couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076. Or you can also visit Scott on Facebook, Clemens Painting. All right, then. We're going to dive right in. You know that this month is, September, is Suicide Prevention Month. So how do you keep living after your husband decides to stop? My guest tonight is award-winning journalist Rachel Zimmerman, who's been writing about health and medicine for more than 20 years and worked as a health reporter for WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Rachel's first husband, Seth, died by suicide in 2014. Rachel, I'm going to, before I even say anything else, I want to know, the very first thing I'm going to want to know is why we say died by suicide instead of committed. So hold that thought for a second.
I will.
Yeah. He was a devoted father to two young daughters. Seth was a robotics professor at MIT with no history at all of mental illness. Rachel tried to make sense of an unimaginable tragedy by turning to her reporter's instincts, believing that answers to her many questions would hopefully bring her closure. And while she found many of those answers, she realized she would never find the most important one: why her husband took his own life. Her journey to this acceptance is chronicled in her new memoir, Us After. Love the name of that, by the way, Rachel, which she's here to talk about with us. She totally understands this is a sensitive subject, so if you want to skip tonight's show, no hard feelings. It's a tough night, too. This is the anniversary, 23-year anniversary of 9/11. And hopefully, if you know someone who might benefit from hearing Rachel's story, please send it their way. So a big welcome to you, Rachel. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Francesca, for that lovely intro. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So that's the first thing that I want to know is why, one would take their life, they committed suicide, that was it. And all of a sudden it went from committing suicide to death by suicide. And my only guess would be that it's not a crime. And when you think of committing, you are committing a crime, right?
Exactly. I'm really glad you asked that, because the language on this has really evolved. And, you know, it's sometimes confusing and awkward to say it that way. But you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason that we now agree to say died by suicide is, you know, the notion of committing an act implies a crime, and suicide has been a crime. I mean, the history of suicide, it's been a sin, you know, from a religious perspective, it's been a crime. But the current thinking is that, you know, it's a mental illness. And just like we don't call fatal cancer, we don't say you've committed
cancer.
Fatal cancer, right? You know, you haven't committed an illness, and the thinking is that this is an illness, and that is how I've come to think of it. Now, I will say suicide is particularly incomprehensible, right, because it goes against all of our human instincts to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very hard to wrap your brain around the idea that this is not just a choice. You know, you wake up in the morning and decide to leave your family. It's a much more insidious, complex mental illness, the result of which can be self-harm and, in this case, and many others, suicide.
Did your husband have mental illness?
So as you said at the outset, he was never diagnosed with any kind of serious mental illness. He was a, you know, very high functioning tenured robotics professor at MIT. He had a great relationship with our children, who were 8 and 11 years old when he died. He was close with his parents, a big extended family. He was loved by his students. So, in other words, he had a very robust social network.
Right.
And,
which is,
you know,
a big deal. I mean, that's a big...
It is a big deal. It's a big deal because these are not the kinds of profiles you expect from someone who is suicidal, right? Like, the classic conventional wisdom of a suicidal, you know, mind is someone who's socially isolated, who perhaps has suffered from, you know, severe depression, some other, you know, deeply serious mental illness, and perhaps years of addiction. And this was not the case with Seth. I will say, you know, he had been, over the 20 years at MIT, he had gone into the health services complaining of low mood, low energy, and that happened a couple of times over 20 years. And each of those times, the practitioner said, you know, maybe you should go find a therapist. Here's a prescription for an antidepressant. Mm-hmm. So that happened 3 times in 20 years. And each of those times, he didn't go to a therapist. And he took the antidepressant for about a week and then went back and said, you know what, I'm much better. I don't need the drugs.
Oh,
so, you know, my feeling after reviewing and researching and probing his medical records and talking to doctors after his death is that, yes, he did have some, you know, untreated mental illness. And, you know, 2 people in his family had bipolar disorder. I don't know if that's, it's hard to believe he could function at that level
right.
with bipolar, but people do. And people also are very good at hiding depression. And a friend of mine, she read the book recently, and she said, you know, it was like Seth had a PhD in hiding. And I think that's an important thing for people to realize about their loved ones, is that we don't, you know, we don't know how good our partners, our children are at hiding. And I think in this culture, especially among men, there's still stigma about talking about your deepest feelings if they're not, you know, upstanding. And I think there was a lot of shame that Seth had about, you know, something was going on in his brain and it wasn't working toward his very high expectations of himself. And he, I think, was ashamed to go get help. And, you know, we can talk about this later, but one of the things, you know, if there is a lesson in any of this, is I tell my kids it's a sign of strength to ask for help, not a sign of weakness.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. But I do think that, you know, men traditionally have been...
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, being a... seeing a therapist in general, you know, I mean, it's not like it certainly was, you know, years ago. But, I mean, I still think that there's a little bit of... I don't know if I'd call it shame, but, you know... Not necessarily, not everyone wants to admit it, and men less so, dare I say. Rachel, it's,
right, they think it's a sign that something is wrong.
Right, men aren't a lot like they are. Men can't cry, right? So,
right, exactly, exactly.
But Rachel, I have a question. It's been 10 years since your husband passed, and, you know, grief has a way of changing as time goes on, yet, you know, this being the anniversary of 9/11, which I was just kind of putting it together right before the interview, because we spent, you know, the whole day at the radio station really playing a lot of songs related to that. And I was thinking, now, is this triggering for you for it to be on this day? And if it is, in advance, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, honestly, so on 9/11, I was working as a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, living in Brooklyn, and I would walk across the Brooklyn Bridge to go to work. And on that day, I was walking across the bridge at about 9:05, and I saw the second plane hit, literally saw it hit the World Trade Center. And at first, nobody knew what was going on. People were screaming, oh, it's a weather chopper, it's, you know, somebody's gotten their directions crossed, and then suddenly everybody screamed terrorist attack. I ran back to Brooklyn. I actually immediately called Seth on the phone. I was living in New York at the time. He was in Cambridge, and I spoke to him for a moment, and then all the phone lines went out. And so, you know, I'm not triggered by it, but I do think we were still dating at the time. We met in our late 30s, and we dated for 3 years before getting married. And I think 9/11 perhaps hastened our decision to get married, among other reasons. But I think of that day, and you know, my brother got on a plane to the West Coast this morning for a family thing, and I just thought he was flying on 9/11. But you know, right. I think 10 years, our feelings obviously evolve and change, and.
Is it still, is grieving still part of your life? Or, and if it is, I guess part B of that question would be, how is it manifesting itself now, if it is?
Right. I mean, you know, it's certainly not the grief I had in the initial phase. I mean, that is acute. It is painful. It's physically painful. It's psychically painful. Mm-hmm. Your body is in shock and it's hard to function. I'm definitely not there. Which I'm very thankful for. You know, the fact that this book came out 10 years after his death, literally 10 years, and that has definitely brought up some of the pain of his death for myself and my two girls. But I think writing it, you know, it wasn't like therapy to write this book, because when you write a memoir, it's not just like dumping your journal onto a page, right? You have to get perspective. You have to make yourself into a character. You have to figure out the narrative arc and which details to include and which not. And I think that process of constructing this into a book rather than a journal entry, that has brought me a lot of perspective and, you know, some level of therapeutic benefit, I think.
Oh yeah, well, writing.
So I don't grieve, but you know, my youngest daughter graduated from high school in June, and yes, I thought, wow, I really wish her father was here. He, you know, would have been so proud of her. And so that those are the moments where I have deep regret and sadness, but not on, you know, it's not part of my daily life. Although he's always around. Like I'm in my office now. There are pictures of him. My kids and I talk about him. We don't squelch discussion about him in any way.
That's important. Did you feel guilty at all when Seth took his life?
Yes. Yeah, short answer.
I mean, I don't even know why I asked the question, because of course, isn't that part of the process of grieving, is feeling?
I mean, I think particularly for suicide, I haven't talked to a single survivor of a loved one who's died by suicide who has not thought, what could I have done? I could have stopped this. And, you know, I think that's a natural thing. And for me, you know, I think for spouses, it's particularly acute because, you know, it's like I slept next to the guy we were married for 12 years, together for 15. You know, I thought I knew him. And on top of that, being a reporter, you know, here I am, a professional observer.
Right.
And what signs did I miss?
Right.
So, yes, I did think about that a lot. I mean, you know, I was just telling someone, the day before he died, I took him to get a massage because his stress and anxiety was escalating. Mm-hmm. And years later, that massage therapist said to me, was there something I did to trigger, you know, him to then go die by suicide? I'm like,
no,
didn't do anything. But that's the extent to which people feel like they could have stopped it. Because, again, back to our initial discussion about, it's a mental illness. It's like, could I have done something to stop the terminal cancer? I mean, that's the most helpful way I think about this kind of stuff.
It is,
But, you know, the other issue is that I think, you know, in popular culture and conventional wisdom, there are these profiles of people who are suicidal, and we covered a few of those, like deeply distressed, mentally ill, perhaps addictions, perhaps socially isolated. And I think maybe we're looking, you know, in some cases in the wrong places. Like for Seth, he had just turned 50, so he had a bunch of new chronic little aches and pains that he really was bothered by, and it interfered with his getting exercise. He played ultimate frisbee, and he had to stop for a while because of this sciatica he had. And so, you know, we know how exercise contributes to, you know, mental health. So he had to stop doing that. He, you know, and that led to his sleep deteriorating. And then we all know about research about the importance of sleep.
Right.
He had a thing called tinnitus, which is a ringing in the ear,
right.
which
yeah.
for
yeah.
years before, you know, it was just like background noise, a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
That escalated. So, you know, each one of those by themselves
right.
does not signal an emergency, but taken mm-hmm. together and then with yeah. this hiding and these expectations of himself and what might happen if he dealt with his mental illness, I think it all was a perfect storm of
right.
of terribleness on a single day, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? You were talking a little bit before about, you know, there's sort of like a profile of someone that you would expect that would die by suicide. But there was several years back, a friend's neighbor's mother
mm-hmm.
Passed away by suicide.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest shock to me
mm-hmm.
because she had everything one could think of to make for one heck of a life. She had faith. She had family. She had kids, grandkids. All her kids lived around her. Her grandkids lived around her. Her husband was extremely successful, and they had three beautiful homes. But it wasn't just that. I mean, she had a very good community, which, you know, I mean, I've been doing radio long enough, you know, and I've had
right.
people on the air talking about, you know, what makes for, you know, a happy, healthy life. And it always circles back to community, right? And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and so and there isn't anybody at this point, at least in my age group, that wouldn't concur that money does not buy happiness, for sure. However, you know, I mean, it certainly does help to some degree. You know, takes the edge off. Yeah, you know, I have always said money doesn't buy happiness until your dog gets sick.
Right. Oh my goodness.
And then it buys happiness. And so she died by suicide, and then that completely changed my entire way of thinking. Like I just was shaking my head, like, how can that possibly be?
Right. I think many people have that kind of experience, not with a, you know, necessarily with their neighbor, but with,
yeah.
I can't, this person
yeah,
had such a good life.
Yeah,
why would
yeah,
they
yeah.
give it up? And that's how I felt about Seth. And one thing I learned, you know, is that, so the suicidal mind is not thinking about those good things. They are only thinking about their own pain. They are thinking it will never end. And they are thinking, how can I stop it? And there is a kind of tunnel vision that you get into where, you know, it's not about your kids or your houses or your money. It's the illness. And
mm-hmm.
you cannot get your brain to move away from the illness. You cannot gain the perspective to say, look, moods change, moods pass. You know, this is like the weather. It's pouring now, but the sun will come out.
Right.
You know, tomorrow, as they
say. Right.
But, like, no, that doesn't happen. And I think for people who don't suffer from depression, it's really hard
for them to
be
wrap their
in that state.
To wrap their head around.
It really is a tunnel vision.
Right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Francesca Luca Show. I am speaking with Rachel Zimmerman. We are discussing her husband died by suicide. The show is sponsored by Clemens Painting. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, more to come. Stay with us here, listeners.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next.
Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will.
The time is now to finally install that new patio or fire pit that's been in your dreams. Your home is ready to be beautified with stonework, but when the time comes, you want and need the best. That's where Stein Masonry comes in. Stein Masonry provides the best in high-quality construction and hardscaping services. With an experienced and dedicated team, they'll tailor any project to your specifications. When you decide it's time to enhance your home, don't mess with less than the best. Trust the guys you know. Stein Masonry, family-owned and operated and local. Visit them online today for a free quote at steinmasonry.com.
Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. Welcome back, Rachel.
Thank you.
So, your daughters are both happy and successful adults, despite this obviously horrific trauma that they went through as children. So, what did you do to guide them through that obviously worked?
Right. Well, they're 18 and 21, so they're technically adults, but you know how that goes.
Yeah,
but
right.
Yes, they are. My youngest just started college, and my oldest is a senior in college, and they have their passions, they have deep, healthy relationships, and it's kind of a miracle that they have thrived. And so, you know, when I first heard, you know, when the state trooper showed up at my door at about 11:30 in the morning on July 1st, 2014, and told me Seth was dead, the first place I went was my kids, and I just started screaming, the girls, because I thought, you know, they were 8 and 11 at the time, and I thought, their childhood is over, we are just simply doomed. Mm-hmm. You know, how does a kid get over the suicide of their beloved father? Mm-hmm. And honestly, my oldest daughter later that day said to me, will we ever be happy again?
Aww.
And I said to her, yes, we will, but I completely didn't believe it. I really thought, you know, this is a life-altering, you know, this changes our trajectory, and it's all in bad ways. But I think, you know, over time, it was really about listening to their needs and not doing what I thought was the right thing, mm-hmm. but really being able to pivot to what they needed. And in that moment, you know, basically they were at day camp that day. And it was about noon, 11:30, 12, and I had till 3 p.m. to come up with the words to tell them that their father was dead. So, you know, one thing that reporters are good at is finding an expert who can help, you know, unravel a complex situation. So a journalist colleague of mine found me this brilliant psychiatrist at Mass General, and she called me, and I said, I need a script. I have no idea what I'm going to tell the kids. Give me a script. And she kind of walked me through, and, you know, she said, you know, tell them the truth. Do not lie to them. Do not give them many details, just the facts, and mostly tell them that you are here, you are safe, the three of you will be together and you will get through this. And, you know, it was a very simple message. And so that's what I did. And from that moment on, you know, we became like this unit, the three of us. And, you know, just one example is I grew up in New York and everyone was in therapy. So I thought, okay, immediately I'm going to put my kids in therapy. They're going to need therapy for the rest of their lives.
Yep.
But my older daughter, 11 years old, was kind of like, okay, you want me to sit in an office of a strange lady and bare my soul about my dead father? No, thank you. So, okay, fine. You know, you don't have to go to therapy. You can, you know, be in the school musical instead and sing your heart out. Like, that's going to be more cathartic for her than sitting and talking to a stranger. My younger daughter, on the other hand, came to a grief group with me because for her, playing with other kids who had gone through similar experiences, not talking about it, but they did art projects and jumped on a trampoline together and, you know, painted rocks, whatever, you know. And she said to me, I thought I was the only one who had gone through something like this, but there are others. So that was helpful for her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I first thought like I would treat my two kids the same, but they were different developmentally. So I had to sort of become attuned to that. And then over the years, you know, like I was very lax about screen. If they felt like they needed to watch Gilmore Girls for 2 hours to just be a stress reliever, fine. You know, so it was small things, but it was also bigger things like, you know, my community. You talked about the importance of community, and I cannot say enough about how lucky we were in that regard. And I will add, we were also, in our unluckiness, very lucky because Seth had left life insurance. So we were financially stable. We could stay in our home. They could stay in the school that they had been at since they were 4 years old. So it was both material and, you know, the moms who brought me food at night and said that you need protein. So here's like a tofu scramble, or drove the kids to gymnastics and to parties and took my calls in the middle of the night, you know, and that was everything.
What would you say to a mother who's going through something like this right now?
Unfortunately, I have had those calls. And mostly I just say, you know, it's acute and painful right now. I promise you, it changes. It gets better. Do not be afraid to ask for exactly what you need. If people want to come over and talk and you don't want to talk, tell them to just leave some food at your door. If you need a ride for your kids just because you can't deal with it, ask. And people are happy to do things. You know, people don't know how to deal with loss and trauma like this, and so they're so happy to be given
a task. Like directions,
exactly.
I know I had a major surgery in January, and everybody, you know, my neighbors were really absolutely fantastic, and then, you know, it got to the point, and everyone was bringing over food, but then I was just constantly you know, like feeling like I was almost entertaining people, which was totally fine. I mean, I liked the company, but at, you know, as I started to heal and you know, when people would say, what would you like me to bring over? What do you like to eat? And I was like, you know what? I'm not able to drive, you know, for 6 weeks. So, you know what? I want to go out. So let's go out to lunch, you know? And it was great because people were like, yeah, sure, whatever you want to do. So I couldn't agree with you more that when you're, you know, in a position where you can't necessarily have complete control over your life and people want to help, it's a great suggestion.
But it's not always easy, right? We're told, like, as women, you know, you're going to work and you're going to take care of your kids and you're going to do it all. And I didn't have my first kid till I was 38. So by that time, I had my career. I was established, you know, and I just thought, I know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And I quickly realized, like, I don't know how to do this. I do not know how to be a single grieving mom and support my grieving children at the same time without asking for help.
Exactly. Rachel, we're going to take another short break. When we come back, though, I'd like you, if you could tell our listeners about some of the most striking, excuse me, or impactful things you learned while you were researching suicide. So
Listeners, I'm losing my voice here. Stay with us here. There is more to come.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next. Train the way the Navy SEALs and pro athletes train with Ultimate Human Performance, a training program crafted by best-selling author and master physiokinesiologist Joe Hippensteel. Ultimate Human Performance teaches you the world's most advanced training methods to eliminate pain and injury. They've helped change the lives of over 10,000 clients across 56 countries and will change your life too. Do you suffer from chronic pain? Are you looking to regain the flexibility you had when you were young? The Joe Hippensteel method will give you back your youth, eliminate pain, and help build a better you. And the best part is, you can do it all from the comfort of your home with Ultimate Human Performance's online video courses. Learn everything from the fundamentals to advanced techniques to help relieve your pain for good. Looking for something in person? Book a one-on-one session or attend one of Ultimate Human Performance's three-day seminar events. Reclaim your body with Joe Hippensteel's Ultimate Human Performance. Find out how to live pain-free today at ultimatehumanperformance.com.
Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed, and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
Right, we are back, and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. I'm speaking with Rachel Zimmerman, who lost her husband 10 years ago to suicide. Rachel, so before the break, I had asked you to tell me about some of the, myself as well as our listeners, about some of the most striking or impactful things you learned with all the research that you did about suicide.
Right. I think we've talked a little bit about some of that, the idea that, you know, people who are, have suicidal ideation, they are not thinking about, you know, how great their lives are or the benefits of being alive. They are just thinking about ending their pain. And, you know, one researcher described it to me as it's like being in a burning building and you feel like the only way out is to jump. So I think, you know, understanding that we don't have as much control as loved ones as we may think, but also, you know, that we should look at other warning signs. Like if your partner, you know, over the course of several weeks has not slept more than a couple of hours, that's, you know, that's a red flag and something should be done.
Was that happening?
Requires some kind of, yes.
Yeah.
The last 2 weeks he told his doctor he hadn't slept for more than 1 to 2 hours. He didn't tell that. I only learned that after he died and I had access to his medical records. So yes, his sleep had massively deteriorated. And I think we really underestimate the value of sleep. So I think that. I also, you know, the idea that we are very bad at predicting who among the millions of depressed people, you know, will die by suicide. One researcher told me that we're still no better than a coin toss at predicting. So, you know, the issue becomes how do we alleviate the suffering that we can see right now?
And they hide it. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for people who have lost a loved one, you know, I dug and dug as a reporter. I really believed that if I found the answer, I would find relief. You know, it's kind of like a news story. You report and report and report, and you sort of come to some, you know, understanding of the issue. You write it, and you're done, and you can move on. And I wanted that sense of closure. But this is a different situation, and I really think people who are survivors of this have to focus on how do I figure out how to find joy and pleasure again.
Exactly. You have, is that right? I mean, you've remarried. You remarried, is that right?
I remarried 5 years after Seth died. I remarried another MIT professor, believe it or not. Friends of ours fixed us up, you know, just said, are you ready to, do you want to meet a guy? And I was like, oh man, I don't think I'm ready. But, you know, I went through the motions because I thought that was the right thing to do. And, you know, there was, he's a chemistry professor, but there was chemistry. And you know, I describe in the book, our first few dates, I really thought I was doing something illicit. I deeply felt that I was violating my vows to Seth because I thought, like, I'm married. And then, you know, it would hit me, like, I am allowed to do this. But, you know, our whole notion of widow in this culture is kind of like, you know, an old woman in black who wears these like black lace collared gowns for the rest of her life and is sort of suffering, long suffering.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think it's, you know, it's human nature to sort of try to move on, not in the sense of forgetting who the person we loved and lost is. I mean, that just never goes away. But holding loss and hope, you know, at the same time, I think is part of the message of this book.
There is this pressure, you know, to fit that bill of the widow or widower, whatever, you know. I actually knew a couple that I used to live near, and many years ago, probably, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, and the wife passed away, very, very short illness, and I was friendly with them, and he really, you know, had all sorts of, you know, guilt around it, and you know, dating anyone else, and that he wasn't allowed, and you know, but I think that's also part of it, that there's a stage, isn't there? When you know, right, and then but then it was just a couple of years later, and then he remarried.
Right.
So I was happy to hear that from him.
Yes, society tells us, you know, you have to wait X amount of time, or this is too early, or, you know, it's really much more intuitive than that, and it is allowed, and you are allowed to find pleasure and joy once again, and, you know, the man I married is lovely and grounded, and he has a daughter who's 6 months older than my older daughter, so we, you know, the three girls, you know, all lived together and shared a bathroom, and, you know, they call each other sisters, and, you know, it's, I mean, blended families have their own dynamics and complexity, and I'm not saying it was all perfect and roses, but, you know, we managed, you know, we muddled through.
Well, 5 years is a good amount of time, though. I mean,
we met before that. Like, we got married 5 years after, but we had met, really, we only met 1 year after, but it was all very slow. I mean, our courtship was extremely slow. I very intentionally did not want my kids to feel in any way that their father was being replaced, because that's not what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But we went very slow, and I stayed in my house, he stayed in his house, and yeah, so
there is a lot there. You know what? There is a lot of judgment, I will say, in just talking about, you know, what society, you know, the pressures of society. And I know that I actually went to school with a girl who was married to a man quite a bit older than her, and they were married a very, very, very long time. And when he passed away, you know, I was only maybe, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, and I spoke to her, and, you know, I don't know how it came up, but, you know, at some point I said, you know, at some point, you know, not now, but, you know,
right,
at some point, right. Oh, but she'd already been dating.
Oh my goodness.
And then,
I have
to tell you.
Yeah, we all have a knee-jerk reaction to that, but, you know,
it's,
I don't,
her business, you know what, but you
anybody
know what,
looking for pleasure.
That's
in,
right.
In a,
yeah. And, you know, it was funny because I, used to teach yoga at this gym, and I knew a lot of the people who I went to school with, and, you know, there was a bit of talk about it, you know, like what, you know, but, you know,
right.
You know, tried to, like, be like, okay, you know, what is there to judge? I mean, she was an only child, her mother and father had both passed, now her husband had passed, she had no sisters and brothers, and, you know, she was very, very clear that it's like, you know what, life goes on, and I loved him, and she didn't,
right,
you know, minimize the love. I don't know, it does seem a little soon, but I don't really think it's up to me or anybody else.
Right. No,
right?
It's a very particular, I mean, we all hear about, like, the stages of grief, and this is how it works, but, you know, that's been debunked, and grief, you know, it's very individual, and it ebbs, and it flows, and, you know, you'll be in one stage, and you'll move to the next, and then you'll go back, and it isn't even, doesn't even feel like a stage. And so, mm-hmm, yeah, I think it's a very individual, it's both universal in the pain of grief, but mm-hmm, it's also very individual in the day by day and how we bring ourselves back to life. You know, and I will say, you mentioned yoga. You know, if some people who say, like, I've lost somebody, I really believe that loss, you know, becomes a physical part of your body, and there's physical pain, and yoga really helped me after Seth died. Just breathing, stretching, like coming back to your body,
coming back to your center.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You need that. I mean, you really do, you know, and you don't realize until you actually get on a yoga mat, sometimes if you're in a very stressful situation, how much you're actually holding your breath, right?
That's the first thing
we do is hold our breath as if something's going to get better that way, right?
Yeah, it's not only yoga. I mean, it's, for some people, it's yoga. For some people, it's, you know, jumping into cold water. The first summer after he died, my mother was generous enough to let my girls and I stay with her in her cottage on Cape Cod for those first 2 months. And mostly I wanted to just curl up in bed all day, but I forced myself and my kids to jump in the water every day just mm-hmm. because, like, the perspective, feeling your body, you know, and just getting out of your crawling into your own bed mode, I thought was really important.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't always happy about it, but yeah, I will. While we're here, can I, like, plug my event?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was actually multitasking. I was just looking at Larry. Let me just ask Larry. So we're going to take a break, and then we have one more segment left, right? And then how many minutes is that one? 10 minutes. Okay. Okay, perfect. Okay, yes, Rachel, please tell us.
So if you want to hear more about this book and how I came to write it, and, well, let me do it again. If you want to hear more about this book, I'm doing an event this Friday, September 13th at 7 p.m. at the Brookline Booksmith. I'll be in conversation with the amazing journalist Amy Doxer Marcus, who works for the Wall Street Journal, and it should be a really interesting evening.
Yeah, thank you very, very much.
The event is free. Mm-hmm. The event is free. You just go on the Brookline Booksmith website and sign up.
All right, fantastic. Thank you. We are going to take a short break. Listeners, if you have missed part of the show, you're going to want to hop on over to either my iTunes page or Spotify and listen there. Please feel free to leave a review, subscribe. We are going to take another short break and come into our last segment. When we come back, Rachel, I'd just love to know if there were any, I hate to even ask this question, are there any positives that you've been able to gain from this experience and the life that you've made since? So marinate on that thought, and listeners, stay with us here. We will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next.
Are you tired of looking tired, experiencing hormone changes or weight gain? You are not alone. Skin Aesthetics and Buzzards Bay can help you on your journey to live well and be well. If you're looking for a comfortable experience to have your medical spa and wellness treatments and want to restore that youthful beauty to your skin, I've found just the place, Skin Aesthetics in Buzzards Bay. From dermafillers to biostimulators, neurotoxins, and PRP treatments, Angela Nelson is your go-to for medical skin treatments to give you that rejuvenated look and feel. With over 20 years' experience and glowing reviews from many satisfied clients, you can trust Angela Nelson to help you reach your wellness goals. Treat the signs of aging and gravity with all the tools to turn back the clock and get back your vitality. You don't want to wait. Plus, Skin Aesthetics offers other wellness services like body sculpting, contouring, and IV therapy. Embrace the fountain of youth. Begin your journey of self-care today. Visit skin-aesthetics-ma.com. You'll be glad you did.
Need a reliable place for your pet? Does your dog crave extra stimulation instead of social isolation? Sign up for doggy daycare at the Dog's Den in Pembroke. With two separate yards and plenty of supervision, your dog will have a ball and tug-of-war toys and plenty of new friends. The Dog's Den also specializes in grooming. Each groomer at the Dog's Den has decades of experience and will leave your furry friend refreshed and ready for their next adventure. Schedule your grooming or daycare today at thedogsdengrooming.com.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and you're listening to the Francesca Lucas Show. The show is sponsored by Clemens Painting, and I do recommend them. They do a fabulous job. You can find them on Facebook, or you can call Scott Clemens at 781-710-0076. I know you will be very glad that you did. All right, welcome back, Rachel.
Thank you.
So we've got about 10 minutes left, and I'd like to try to, this today as I was coming into the station, I'm listening to music and talking about 9/11, and then we're talking about this, and it's all so sad, but let's try in this last segment here. There's got to be a silver lining somewhere. I don't know. What do you think? Is there?
I mean, I will tell you that the original working title of this memoir was The Good Suicide.
Oh.
And the reason it was The Good Suicide was not because there was anything good about Seth's suicide. It was a disaster. It was enormously painful for me, for my children, for his family, for so many others. But the good was that I didn't think we would come back to life after. I didn't think we would survive, honestly, and we did. And my kids, as I said, you know, they're 18 and 21. They're incredible young women, and they're particularly empathetic. I mean, they've been through a lot, and they have some perspective on life. And so do I, you know. I mean, I think anyone who has gone through some kind of loss and trauma and
turns into an old soul very fast, huh?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And, yeah. You know, I've done a bunch of book events, and what's amazing is so many people have been through some kind of trauma or loss, not absolutely necessarily this one, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, something, and they want to talk about it and share their experience. And I think, you know, one of the benefits of putting this story out there is that it triggers a conversation, and it allows people to share their own stories, and I think it makes us all more human to be able to share these difficult but deep and important stories.
It certainly makes for, it takes away any kind of superficiality and much more of an authentic life, does it not?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
What about your current husband? I assume, obviously, I'm going to just say that he's got to be supportive when the grief about Seth resurfaces, but I'm just wondering kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, people ask that. He's extremely grounded. Mm. You know, he has read the book. He loves the book. He is just super supportive. And again, you know, it's about holding these two realities. So, you know, somebody once asked me, well, his name is Munji Bawendi. And somebody asked, well, what can you compare, like, Seth and Munji? What's the difference? What are some differences between them? And I, you know, I wasn't joking, but I said, Munji is alive. And,
yeah,
you know, it was a
right
little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's kind of like...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and he is very aware of that, and he has a lot of perspective, too. You know, he's been through a divorce, he has a daughter, he's lived a life. He's also a tenured professor at MIT, and he knows what I've been through. He's very supportive when I, you know, when I have these moments of why isn't Seth seeing our kids, you know, but he also knows that he is the one who is here, and we, you know, have this very strong now 5-year marriage, and we live in a beautiful home in Cambridge. We have a garden. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. We had no garden. We couldn't even conceptualize a garden, and we both feel very lucky. And I think, you know, that's his perspective on this material, and he's come to a number of book events and has been super supportive partner.
I think one of the things that I've observed as I've gotten older and known of, you know, known some widows and widowers, that I think that one element that the spouse of the widow or widower has in common is just really having perspective. Like, if you want to keep pictures of you and the children and your husband, or the children and your husband, and keep them up, or want to be open about talking about, you know, some experience, and just instead of feeling threatened by that, but really allow
right
that. And one of the
right
things that I remember an old neighbor of mine saying to me, her now husband, but at the time, well, you know, how am I supposed to, you know, how am I supposed to be his girlfriend? He's got pictures of his deceased wife all over the place. And you know, so she, you know, finally she just said something. And, you know, he just said that just because she's no longer with me doesn't mean that I still don't love her. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I guess that I guess that really a lot has to do with your own sense of security, your own upbringing,
yes.
your own
yes.
Sense of identity, obviously. But, you know, and whether there was solid ground
right.
growing up, right?
So I think that's right.
Yeah, I think so, too, you know.
I mean, the Wall Street Journal ran an excerpt of the book, and they wanted to run a bunch of pictures, and they're all many pictures of Seth and I, and I was like, can you put one picture of my current husband in there too?
Oh.
And they said okay, we'll do it in the online version but not in print. And I apologized to him. He's like, it's fine, don't worry.
Oh, that's so sweet. I would love to continue this conversation, Rachel. Unfortunately, we have to stop. It flew by. I was a little concerned. You know, it's not the easiest of topics. I appreciate you sharing this heartfelt story, but a tragic one, obviously. So good luck to you on Friday night. And it's really, really been a pleasure. Listeners, the name of the book is called Us After. I haven't had the pleasure of reading it yet. So I don't know if it's a beach read, but I know there's a couple good beach days left. So,
yes.
So feel free to pick it up. And if you're in the area on Friday, meet Rachel. So again, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Francesca. I'm not sure if it's a beach read, but people have
yeah, I know. I was thinking that too. I don't know if it's a beach read either. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, certainly not if you bring a cooler, right, to the beach.
Yes.
No.
But it's an unputdownable sort of read, I've been told.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this conversation and your great questions.
Thank you so much. All right, listeners, we need to wrap things up and say good night. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. Make it a great week.
Mas ele manda pra...